Indeed.com.
This week, and actually for this week and next week, we're going to be continuing with our Dents in the Dark series. We're going to be talking about foster care and about adoption. So this week, Bob and Rachel are going to come up and speak, and Adeline and I are going to come up and speak after that. Next week, the Brunks will be speaking about adoption as well. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, Ed and I were talking, and we thought, we were trying to figure out the scheduling, and we thought it was going to be the Brunks and I who were sharing the stage, and Bob was going to be off on his own, and I told him, once you share the stage with Bob, you're going to be wishing that you had shared the stage with me. So, but it kind of got flip-flopped, so I drew the short straw, and I have to share the stage with Bob. Yeah. But, you know, that's the way it goes. God works in mysterious ways. That's all I can say. All right, so please welcome Bob and Rachel, the Wittens.
And really, I think Eric just wanted Rachel to talk, and this is his way of getting her up here. Do you need help? Oh.
He was being nice, not me. I am broken.
All right. Who's going first? It already is. All right. So Eric asked us, as Otis said, to kind of share about foster care and adoption and just how, like, what's our story personally and just kind of how can the church come alongside in these different situations. And so to start out with, what is foster care? And I know I myself didn't really know until we started digging more and more into what this is and what this system is, really what it was about. I mean, there's even, like, my neighbors came up and asked what the situation was, and I told them, and they didn't understand. But the technical definition of foster care is a temporary arrangement in which adults provide for the care of a child or children whose birth parent is unable to care for them. And so, basically, if there's children out there, like in a family, and the parents have issues going on where they are not able to take care of the children in a safe manner or to keep the child alive. The county comes in and pulls the child and puts them into the foster care system, which, as we found out, is interesting. I'll leave it at that. So my personal story, Rachel's gonna share hers after mine. So what brought this decision to foster upon my heart? As we have two biological boys, and just kind of my kids, the boys were getting into school. Isaac went into kindergarten all day. And so just knowing that we're kind of going into a different phase in life, I kind of felt like, I think we have a good marriage. I know that, like, both of us, we have the same belief in that if we are not going forward in our marriage, we are going backwards. And so we are constantly trying to fight for the relationship and to keep growing and to keep learning and to not just be stagnant in the relationship and not just be roommates. And that's something that is a struggle for everybody that I've talked to that's in a marriage. Is, I'm looking at you two right there. For those that don't know. But knowing that we have a positive and a marriage that we're pushing for, we have two solid, amazing boys, and that we also have an awesome support system within my family and Rachel's family and close family by. And we also had we have an amazing church family to support. I was just thinking, and like, man, we need to open this up. We need to open this family and this up to children that might need help. And I didn't want to be selfish and just try to just keep it. And the fun part is that we went into the fostering thing with the idea of like, hey, we could take on another child, you know, a infant or a smaller human, knowing that we would be going from man-to-man defense to like zone defense, where, you know, football terms now for you guys. But God had other plans. Like, we were thinking, yeah, we could handle another one, and God's like, nope, I want to give you two. So now we're in prevent defense. And the thing that I keep going back to is that we knew what we could handle, but God knows what we can handle with him. And so through this whole thing, I believe that God is telling us and knows that we can only do, that we can only raise two more children with his help and relying on him, which is what he wants. With what we have, without God's help. And so yeah, that's my tidbit of just wanting to open up our family and into what we have.
So that was Bob's story. The attachment factor, knowing that the goal of foster care was to reunify the child with her parent, and feeling that heartbreak of separation from the connection we had made, and preparing my heart to, like, return the child to their parent, not knowing that the conditions were as safe as what I felt was safe enough. And I had also heard some of the horror stories from some acquaintances of mine who fostered infants. Like, their age range was like birth to one. And, you know, bio parents being upset and banging on their doors at all hours of the night asking for their child back, even though it was not in the foster parents' ability or authority to do that. And I was like, no, you know, I'm not on the same page. And for us in our marriage, it's always been, for major decisions, it's two yeses, otherwise it's a no. And so, surprise. but Bob was, you know, we joke, but Bob was very patient and didn't rush me or, you know, make me, like, tell me, you are my wife and I make the decisions. It was none of that. He was very gentle, and he kept praying about it, as did I, but I was just not comfortable for a long, long time. And but it remained on his heart. And what turned my heart, or I should say what really started softening me, was that I have a good friend who spent 20 plus years in the emergency room as a nurse. And locally, yep, at Neenah Hospital.
Not some big city.
Yep. What do you mean? Neenah's huge. Anyways, we were up to breakfast, and I was just sharing with her, you know, like, this is something that's still on Bob's heart, and I'm still struggling with it. And she kind of got teary-eyed because some of the things she had seen recently in her ER, which, full stop, this is going to be the worst of the worst, right, because she works in the emergency room. But would tell me about these children that would come in, and the bottom half of them were covered in blisters because they had been dipped in a boiling pot of water, or burn marks on them, or had been subject to injections by drugs as infants, or starved by choice, not necessarily by resources. And it broke me to think that this was happening next door, and what God started softening me to towards is, you know, this is, no matter what, this is going to be heartbreaking for sure. But these children will, you know, and in maybe some ignorance, this was God speaking through my ignorance, but like, even if we suck at this, like, we could be terrible at being foster parents, but I know they will be safe, they will be fed, they will have a bed, and they will have a family. And if even for a moment we could give them a glimpse of what could be and break something that's a cycle, what an amazing, and I don't want to say gift, because for them this is also tragic, like being taken from your home is also tragic, but just an opportunity to see what something else could be like, because sometimes children don't even have that experience of knowing what it could be like to feel safe or to feel loved or to be provided for. And so I continued to pray about it, and it was about 2 years after Bob originally came to me, and I said, okay, I'm willing to start the licensing process, knowing that it takes years to get licensed. I'm like, okay, I'm willing to, like, dangle my feet into the water. And so we started the licensing process, and then we needed to take a break from that to help Isaac with some things that he really needed some support on. And then shortly after that, we started up again, and the licensing process did not take years. And we were licensed on a Friday, and the girls moved in on Tuesday. So, in fact, we knew they were going to move in before we were officially licensed. So that's how incredible the needs were. Oh, no, that's not applicable. And, you know, Eric did ask us to talk about some of the struggles we faced, but I do want to start out with some of the really amazing things. And Bob and I picked out two stories because we don't want to take up all the time. But from the fostering perspective and our foster daughters, which any of you who have known our story, we've been foster parents for, we're just shy of 5 years, and we've only had these two girls. They were our first placement, and they will likely be our only placement, just where the case is headed. We have other friends who have had a couple dozen children through their home in the same licensing period as us, so everybody's story is different. But we can't say their names. At this point in our case and in our situation, but I was taking the older one to school a couple of years ago, and she was talking about being with her family and what that has meant, and talking to her friends, and she... What? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, older one. She was probably 7 or 8 or 9, something like that. And she was like, you know, This is really interesting. Like, I don't even think I'd know about God if it wasn't for moving in with you guys. And we had been really struggling with some of her behavioral challenges and stuff like that. And it was just one of those times where God was like, see, she knows me because you were willing to open your heart. Could have God met her in some other way, maybe years later? Of course. But it was just a little note to me personally and to us as a family that this was important work that we were doing. Also, I'll share a story about my youngest son, Isaac, and I can say his name. but we were on a walk one night, and I don't remember how old he was, maybe 11, 12. I was asking him about his day at school, and he said that there was this kid in his class who was very destructive, kind of a bully, like your stereotypical bully. Made fun of kids, sometimes hurt kids, sometimes had to be restrained. They would go under code whatever color because you started throwing desks. was very disrespectful to the teacher. And just one of those kids that, like, as a parent, you're like, and want to protect them from. And I just started asking him, like, well, how, you know, how does that make you feel when that happens? Do you feel safe? You know, all this kind of stuff. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, they do a good job. But, Mom, I feel so bad for him. I wonder what his home life is like. I wonder if he's loved at home. And, or, like, if his brothers or sisters treat him like that, maybe. And it was just like, what? Like, this kid is young, and he already has a perspective that a lot of times behaviors are masking something underneath that is much more rooted in unfelt or safety that is not felt in your core home. And so some of the good that's come of this is we've given, as hard as it's been for our family, and some of the challenges our biological children have faced and the trauma we've induced into our home, has really opened their eyes and given them compassion in a situation that I don't know if they would have been subject to otherwise.
Another, two more good stories. Is we got the older one. we pray with each child at night before like our both boys and the girls. But the older girl likes to cuddle up with me during prayer time. And I think that is like something that didn't happen before. And over the years has kind of started to, she's feeling comfortable now and opening up and starting to do that. And I think it's kind of a cool, special time for her to have that. another funny thing is the little one who has been with us since she was 15 months old and now is almost six. And we will oftentimes talk to her, just look at her like, hey, who loves you? You do? Why do you always tell me? So it's funny, but we try to make sure that both the girls know, well, and boys.
Oh. A couple months ago, this church hosted and supported a bunch of Remedy Drive concert events. It was an effort to, I always want to say something that's super, like, almost inappropriate. Awareness to human trafficking. Because if you say they hosted a human trafficking event, that sounds terrible. Combat, human trafficking, whatever. Anyways, but we went as a family. We got a sitter for the girls and the boys, and Bob and I went. And the lead singer, David, it wasn't just a concert. It was an experience for those of you who weren't there. And he did a lot of talking about some of the things they were doing to rescue these children from human trafficking and slavery and labor and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, oh my gosh, wow, like that's incredible work that they do. And we need to, you know, expose this horrific situation going on in the world, in Oshkosh, in the state, and everywhere. They do such amazing work, and I wish I could be a part of that, and blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden, he mentioned something about fostering being something that was an incredible work towards us, and like it just kind of struck us, like, what? And he was talking about, you know, like, these are, you know, not everybody can get on a stage and be a, you know, rock star. Not everybody can, like, make a bunch of money and give a ton of it away. But it's really about ordinary people saying yes, ordinary people doing something wherever God prompts you. And a lot of times, like, when people hear our story or they see us struggling, they're, you know, like, wow, you know, blah, 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 and try to put us up on a pedestal, and we're like, no, like, well, first of all, I'm just glad we're all alive, because that's kind of an accomplishment, but two, we're just ordinary people that need sometimes extraordinary support, which is something that we've had through the things that Bob mentioned before, but we gotta hurry because the Millers need time to talk. but Eric wanted us to share a little bit about our struggles, just to bring some awareness to that. I'll let Bob share that.
Thank you for letting me share that. The struggles. The struggles can be summed up with one word, and that word would be trauma. Whether it's ours, it's their trauma, our kids' trauma. The emotional toll that fostering has taken and the trauma takes on us is enormous. We both thought going into this would be more of a physical thing, like trying to take care of somebody and trying to feed them. And, you know, you're not allowed to feed with a slingshot. You're not allowed to, I don't know. But it's emotionally very taxing and very hard. And it brings up things like, for me, trauma that I didn't even realize that happened and that I was a part of, and things that happened to me growing up. And it's digging things up with Rachel. And we get to learn about how important connection is with children, how important felt safety is. Why kids create chaos when it doesn't even have to exist. It just helps them feel safe, is creating chaos. That's what they're used to. They came from chaos, so they create chaos to feel safe. Control, giving kids control, like positive power. Learning healthy boundaries with bio parents. dealing with the system. Leave it at that. but, you know, court dates, lawyers, I didn't even know what a CASA worker was until this. I didn't know what a guardian ad litem was. But there's, all of this stuff is just part of some of the struggles.
And let me be clear about something. This is our story. This is something that God prompted us to do. Fostering isn't for everybody. Adoption isn't for everybody, and that's okay. That's really, really okay. There were times that I wondered if it wasn't for us because of some of the ways that it challenged us. But if there is a little nudge on your heart and you've prayed about it, and getting licensed to be a foster parent isn't in your cards, that's nothing to be ashamed of or feel guilty about or anything. Like, that is not of God. And it's okay. But there are other ways that you can support the people who do that and still be a part of the healing that these children need. And I want to just go through some, like, practical things, because sometimes we all need, like, ideas. But God may be speaking to you in unique ways. But you can get involved in a mentor program. So our oldest foster daughter has a mentor, and she has since she was 6. And a mentor just hangs out with them once a week, every other week, something like that, and just does something that's interesting with the child. Anything to be another positive influence, another safe adult in their life to help them understand that not all adults are unsafe. You can get licensed just for respite care. Foster parents need respite care, which basically means you're licensed to take them for a night or two overnight into your home. This helps the family kind of recalibrate, gives them a little bit of a break from the day-to-day challenges. And in our case, gives us a chance to reconnect with our bio kids, because a lot of times our attention is very much spent on our foster children. To be on call for, like, clothing and hygiene needs, because a lot of times kiddos show up at the drop of a hat and don't have much. So Like, I know there are a couple times there was a case of diapers that showed up at our door, and that was a huge blessing to us. Hand-me-downs, big, big deal. I know in our case, it is very difficult to go shopping with the girls. The options, the noises, shopping, you know, all that, it's very, very stressful for everybody. But to be able to go through a bag of clothes at home and to be like, I like that, I don't like that, and then not have to worry about, for us anyways, like spending the money and for them not to wear it and all that kind of stuff, that's huge. We have been blessed with garbage bags full of clothes, and that's a big, big deal. Offering free babysitting. whether it's for a date or for, you know, a whole day or something like that, very, very helpful. Home improvement things. So sometimes foster kids do get aggressive and things can get broken. And, we're with appointments and meetings and all that kind of stuff, it's hard to fix things. So if you're a fixer person, that's also helpful. There were so many times, like, this was so new to me. Like, I had questions about, like, the legal process that the county couldn't fully support me in. So, like, if you're paralegal or whatever, or medical, too, like, their insurance is different. And so to get in for dental care is, like, okay, they have an opening in a month. So sometimes that can be really tough. So any sort of legal or medical advice or support is also appreciated without doing anything that would, like, be bad for your licensing. Like, I'm not asking anybody to break their own rules. But most importantly, is prayer support. That is more important than a bag of clothes or extra toothbrushes or whatever, because this really, really is a spiritual battle. What better way for Satan to get a grip on somebody by telling a young child from a very beginning that they're not safe and they're not important and they don't matter and they don't have a family and their connections are just going to get broken no matter what they do or don't do. So please pray for these kids. Please pray for the foster parents and the foster siblings. And the bio families and everybody, because this really, really is a spiritual battleground. And we need God to prevail in all ways. So thank you very much, Otis.
You gonna introduce?
Go ahead.
That's all we have. If you have any questions or anything, you can talk to us afterwards or anything. But next, we have Otis and Adi are gonna talk about the Packers.
Yeah, go Packers.
No. Here we go.
All right, thank you. Okay. All right, thank you. Adeline and I are here to also talk about foster care, but talk about the continuation of that when the foster care, turns into an adoption. For anyone who doesn't know, Adi and I have been foster parents, licensed foster parents for the last 8 years or so. And 2 years ago, we adopted two girls into our home. Most of you guys were there. Of course, for confidentiality reasons, I cannot reveal their names to you. So we'll just call them Annabelle and Belle Anna. So those are the girls we adopted. At the time we adopted them, they had been in foster care for about 5 years. Around three of those years were in our home. I know that Bob and Rachel talked about this a little bit, but I do want to, touch on foster care a little bit. Foster care stinks. It's a very bad place for anybody, and it's the kids have you know, this history of abuse, physical abuse, or neglect, or drugs, you know, whatever bad thing is in their past, they have to deal with that. But then when that comes to a head, you know, then the cops come in and they pull those kids out of their home and they pull them away from their parents, and that's a whole traumatic event in itself. And these traumatic events are just being stacked on top of one another, and it's hard for anyone to deal with, especially kids. I was writing stuff down yesterday, and I was having a really hard time of finding the words to describe it without people thinking that I'm overstating it. So I just wanted to share one quick story about a foster kid who came into our home a year ago. And we got a call in the early evening from the social worker saying there was a little boy. He was 2 years old. It looked like he was going to have to come into foster care, so they were going to have to bring him to our house. And so we got some stuff ready. We got a bed ready, and you know, whatever we could. We really didn't know who he was or what the situation was or anything. And a few hours later, we got another phone call. Yes, indeed, they are coming. They're on their way. And they came and they dropped him off, and he was just the sweetest little 2 year old that you've ever met. I mean, he was happy. We played with him all night. It took him forever to fall asleep. It was
11 o'clock when he showed up on a Sunday night, so it was really, really late for a 2 year old, and really, really late for us. But, I mean, he had just been taken away from everything he knew, so he was hyped up.
Yeah. And, I stayed and played with him until about 2 a.m., and then I was falling asleep. But Adi stayed up and played with him for several hours more after that before he finally conked out. And we found out later that the reason he was in foster care was that his father had just stabbed and murdered his mother. And in front of him. After he'd been in our home for, I don't know, maybe an hour, and he came with nothing. I mean, he just had nothing with him at all. And we found out later that, you know, all of his stuff had to stay in the apartment because it was all evidence now because of this horrible crime. And the social worker called us, you know, like I said, an hour or so after he'd been there. And they said, look, you need to take his shirt off of him and put his shirt in a paper bag, and I'm going to come back and I'm going to pick that up because the police want to test it and see if there's remnants of blood on it. And sure enough, there was. So that means that he had witnessed it. He was there in the room when this happened. And, you know, without his shirt, I mean, he came to us with nothing, you know, and not even the shirt on his back was with him. He had nothing. And at different times, and they asked if we were going to adopt him because they loved him so much. You know, and that just couldn't happen for lots of reasons. That's just the way things go. And I don't know why he was brought into our home. I don't know what I really could do for him. I really wanted to do something, but it was just all out of my hands. There was nothing I could do. And I don't know why God brought him into our lives. You know, maybe it's just so that we knew his story, so that we could carry it. Maybe he was there so we could pray for him. I don't know. I don't know how he's doing now. But But we still think about him a lot, and we still pray for him. And that, you know, that kind of goes back to just the whole Dents in the Darkness series that we're doing. There are dark things out there, and this is really just one story. I could tell you many others, but I won't. And I'm reminded of a long time ago when Adi and I were first married. I was talking to a lot of a lot of couples that that have already been through that journey, and I asked them about kids, about having kids. And at the time when we were first married, we really weren't thinking about having kids at all. And so I would ask people about it, and they all pretty much said the same thing. They said that having kids was hard, but it's worth it. That's what they all said. And that really goes back to, doing the work of putting dents in the darkness, no matter what that is, no matter what that looks like, no matter where you choose to apply yourself. I can tell you that it is hard to do, but it's worth it. God grows us through that struggle, and it's hard to see. It's not going to be apparent all the time, and you may never know, why things happen, just like this boy that came into our home. I really have no idea, but, I do know that God is in control of that, and that he's using those things to grow us, and he can use those things to grow you also. Taking care of foster kids and really just kind of helping families in general is kind of our own personal mission statement. There are things that compete for our time and our attention. They compete for our donated dollar all the time, and you can't donate to everything. You can't help every worthy cause. So I would encourage you to pick something. I can do this. This is where I want to help. And, for Adeline and I, that's helping families. It's helping kids. That looks a lot of different ways. That's pretty broad. But, just a few months ago, we started donating again to Bella Medical Clinic here in Oshkosh. The church did a thing for them several years ago. And especially with Roe versus Wade being overturned, that was something that we thought they really could use our help with. So that, fell under that umbrella, and so we decided to do that. And no matter what it is, I can't encourage people enough to, to decide what it is they want to help with. What dents can you put into the darkness? And hang on to that and focus your energy on that and do that.
Okay, so that's kind of where we came from. That's kind of what we really felt God was leading us to as a couple and as a family, was strengthening families, helping children, because we saw so much hurt in families in our society that this is a place that families are foundational to our society. God created families, and that this was a thing that was being attacked by Satan, and it was something that we could do something for. And so we became the foster parents, and then we later became adoptive parents. So when you, like what Bob and Rachel were talking about, what we were talking about, when you become an adoptive parent, what you're really choosing is to take all the pain, all the hurt that child or those children have suffered, all that they're going to struggle with currently and in the future, and bring it into your family and struggle with it too. If you already have biological children in your family, you're asking them to be a part of that struggle, to put that struggle on them too. Once an adoption happens and the child has a permanent home, the problems don't just go away. They don't just get better. the pain is still real. And in some ways, it's even magnified, because before it was maybe I can be back with my biological parents, but now it's I will never live with my biological parents again. Maybe I'll be with my biological siblings. Now I'm never going to be with my biological siblings. I don't know if I'll ever see some of them again. And those are huge losses for children to deal with. They don't have the skills to deal with that. And so it comes out in behavior. People say children are resilient, but they are not. They hurt just like everybody else, and they do not know how to handle it. So part of your job as an adoptive parent, as any parent, is to teach your children how to handle pain. But you're trying to teach children how to handle pain that maybe you yourself haven't even experienced. It's so much bigger. And right before we officially did the adoption, one of the things that I really struggled with was I am not enough. Their problems are bigger than me. I cannot handle this. I cannot heal them. I am not enough for them. Bringing them into my home, providing consistent care, trying my best to love and raise them is not enough. Which as a parent, you really want it to be, but it's not. And that was a truth I really had to face before the adoption. But as a Christian, I know the one who can provide healing. I know the one who can change hearts, who can take stories and redeem them, who can make joy out of pain. My job as a parent is to do my best to point them to the God, creator of our universe, and help them come to him with their pains and their hurts, which is a humongous task. And I don't do it perfectly. But so as an adoptive parent, like, I feel like I've become so dependent, constantly growing in my dependence on God. I need more patience. I don't have enough. I need supernatural patience. I'm run out of compassion. The behaviors are driving me insane. I do not feel bad or heartbroken for them and their story and their pain anymore. I just want their behavior to stop. Right? And I lose my compassion. God, I don't have enough compassion. I need more compassion. I need your compassion. Well, they were talking about inconsistent care, how children don't learn to trust adults, how adults, when you grow up in environments that foster care, children grow up in, the care is inconsistent, and they don't learn to trust adults. They don't learn to let adults provide for their needs. They think adults are scary. Different situations are scary. And so what you end up in a relationship with as an adoptive parent is you end up in this yo-yo where the child needs you to meet their needs, physical needs. They also have a need for emotional connection and for relationship, because that is how God made us. But it is terrifying for them because they think they're so afraid of losing more people, more broken relationships. Are you going to hurt them? Those questions sit in their mind constantly. And so they have a need to pull you close, to be in relationship with you, but it's so scary that they end up pushing you back. And you end up in this relationship where they want closeness, and then they push you away and reject you, and they want closeness, and they reject you, and they want closeness, and they reject you. If you were in a relationship with an adult like that, you would walk away because it's not healthy. But when it's your own child, you can't leave. You can't get out of it. We're committed to this.
And you can't kick them out either.
And so your heart hardens trying to protect itself. Your brain starts to experience its own trauma. because of being in this yo-yo relationship where you're basically jerked around, where the child is trying to get what they need in a way that feels safe to them. But it can't be done. And and so it's really emotionally just exhausting. You can't stop it. You can't fix it. You just have to try your best to keep dealing with it each day. Good moments and bad moments constantly, and you never know which one you're gonna get. And they flip like this constantly. And so, so as adoptive parents, it's not that I want to sit up here and complain. We chose this. We knew what we were getting into. But it's still really hard. We feel called to this. This is why we stay. And we're committed to them because we feel that this is what God has asked us to do. And when he calls you to something, it's usually not easy. God calls you to hard things, but he provides for you. And but you can also help support adoptive parents. You can be there to talk to them. And when they say strange things like, I really don't enjoy being with my kids sometimes. Don't look at them weird. Like, why would you not enjoy your children? Because it's hard to live with a person that you never know when they're going to turn on you. Like, and it makes it difficult to enjoy their company at times, right? It sounds weird. It sounds like an awful thing to say as a parent, but it's a true thing when you're an adoptive parent.
You know, and along with that, it is very hard. The struggles we have are very, very real. But, you know, there's good news here as well. There's also a good side. You know, we've taken those two beautiful girls and we've given them a chance that they didn't have before. You know, we're able to raise them up to be godly women. You know, that's the future that I see for them now. And that is very difficult. But, I mean, how can you put a price on turning those two lives around? There's nothing more valuable than that. We did put together a little list of ways that people can help. The first one is to pray, obviously. The power of prayer is real. Don't feel like, you know, you're not doing anything when you're doing that. The Bible does talk about the power of prayer and what it can do. Another thing you can do is donate. Like I said, you know, we donate to the Bella Medical Clinic. There are other places you can donate to. And not just money, like, you know, like Rachel was saying, donating clothes or diapers or whatever. All that stuff is, it's very valuable. It's very valuable stuff. You know, and even if you, you know, don't find people like us or them to donate to, there are organizations, the Foster Care Closet is there, where you can make those kinds of donations and help other people. Another thing you can do, like Rachel said, doing babysitting or you know, signing up to do official respite care, that's very valuable as well. And there is one more thing that we put down on the list for that people can do to help parents in our situation, and that's really just be patient, and to not judge, you know. Kids in foster care and adoptive kids, you wouldn't always know it to look at them, but the truth is they're special needs kids, and you know, and if you just, you know, see parenting of special needs kids without really understanding the child, it's not gonna look right. It's not gonna look like you would expect it to look. And so I just, I would ask everyone, that's how we as a body, a church body, can be accepting of this, is by being patient with these kids and not judging them. Did you have anything else? No? All right. Well, I do want to thank everyone for being here, and thanks for listening. I want to thank the Wittens as well, and please pray with me. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the opportunity to share our hearts and the Wittens' hearts for foster and adoptive children, and for the families that are looking out for them. I pray for your protection over all of these kids. I thank you that no matter what their situation is, you can redeem them. That as much as we love these kids that are in our home or that we come across, you love them even more. And I thank you that you have the power to fix these kids even when we can't. Lord, I thank you for all the things that you provide for all of us every day. And I thank you for the opportunities that we all have to put dents in the darkness. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Portico Church in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You can find out more about our church at porticocommunity.com.